He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
Beyond the bend. Beyond the bend.
Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Cody.
You're a highly requested guest, so I'm very excited to have you on.
I like hearing that. I've been playing with steel bedding and training it since 2006.
Awesome.
So almost coming up on 14 years, 15 years of doing it.
So take me back to 06 and tell me, or even if it was before that, I'm interested in hearing the first time anyone saw a piece of steel get bent, or just what got you into it?
So I was in Iraq. I was on a year-long deployment, and I was bored out of my mind with my own training. My days were very, very regimented, 6 days on, one day off, getting into the rally area at this time every day, not getting back from the compound until this time. And I had time set aside for training. So I had brought with me a kettlebell, took it all the way from Okinawa and Iraq, lugging it around the whole time to the airports. That was great. at most of the bases, especially, there was a big money surge in those early 2000s as the war was going up. So what a lot of you know is that the war was going on. What a lot of you probably don't know is that the bigger installations and theater had gyms that rival the gyms that you guys are currently paying $100 a month for. Like, unbelievable. Hammer strength equipment, dumbbells up to 150, unbelievable. But I felt, I just had kind of the doldrums feeling going on. Like, press is going good, deadlift is going good, runtime looks all right. But I'm finding that the only reason I'm staying in a schedule is because I have to keep the whole schedule compact or it all falls apart. And I'm online one day, I was actually responding to an email to another guy, and he said, "Have you seen this guy that Bud Jeffries is promoting named Mike Bruce?" Okay, so I check out Mike's promo video, and it was a pretty crazy promo video. So this guy was like a 200-pound lifter, and he was doing, you know, cheat rows with like 300 pounds one hand. He would go and deadlift, you know, 585 for a set of six, standing on a block. It's like, man, that guy is incredibly strong. Well, the product was being promoted on Dennis Rogers' website. Okay. At the time, I had no idea who Dennis Rogers was. I knew Bud Jeffries because I saw his kettlebell stuff that he was doing like real early 2000s. So anyway, I'm poking around on Dennis' site. This is all in 1 minute. And there's a video of him like taking a 10-inch crescent wrench, flattening out over his leg. And I'm thinking, it's a pretty little guy. He looks kind of old. So this is either a magic trick in the sense of something was done to that wrench and that this is how he's getting our attention, right? To turn around and sell you a barbell course, or there's something that I just don't know. So I had never seen that before. So for a couple of weeks, I'm taking a look at his site. I had looked back through some of the books that I had seen in the past, and you'd see that reference to steel bending, but it's like we had talked about, there's never explanation of it. It was just someone would talk about it. So I finally go and purchase Dennis's, he did a DVD that was called like 370 pounds of fury or something like that. It's him, and it was his protege, Pat Povilaitis.
Okay.
It was kind of a fun video because it's just a bunch of little clips from them doing shows and doing bits and doing a little bit of training. And the thing that stands out in the whole DVD was the absolute madness of what it looks like, how Pat Povilaitis would load up to hit a bar. Like, Pat bent steel like that steel did the worst thing in the world to his dog. Like, just, it was just something like I'd never seen before. And yeah. I thought, you know, I've never seen this before. And if it's a fake thing that they're doing, well, it's weird that they're promoting it this way. Right. And I feel the same way about you dipshits out there that are faking your bends. It's weird. Nobody gets it. But if it's real, I need to find out about this.
Yeah.
So I go and I order the bag and nails product from the popular equipment company that sells those. And It arrives one day. I'm sitting up on my little deck by my pod. It's, you know, 2 a.m. and it's 91 degrees outside still. So I roll up my first white nail and just kind of do this with it. Like, I'll let it, yeah, whatever. Roll me up a green nail, and it went the same way.
Yeah.
I grab a yellow nail and I start to do this, and it's starting to move a little bit. And I intuitively just went into this position, pulled it right, yeah, over my hand. And I thought, well, that's pretty neat. Blue nail felt exactly the same. So then I grabbed a red nail out. And the thing is too, is like the first time you see a red nail and you pick it up in your hands, it's funny because, you know, in my mind now, I feel like it's that big. But the, yeah, first time I picked it up, I felt like, so, you know, I'm trying to pull on it. Of course, it's not moving at all. And then I went to try to reverse bend it, and there's this big crack in my wrist. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to break my hand doing this thing.
Yeah.
So for a couple of months, as I was finishing up my tour there, I would do 2 or 3 days a week of just bending a couple bars for fun. And it really was for me just more for a fun thing.
Yeah.
I didn't even take it seriously in the sense of where I thought it would go anywhere with it. I get back to Okinawa, and then I get moved to North Dakota. So this is good for me because buying anything in Japan is incredibly expensive. So if you wanted to practice some steel bending and you're in Okinawa, it might be a thing where you're paying $2 and $3 for a cheap piece of crap bolt. So at, yeah, the time, to me, it's like, I'm not going to mess with that. Getting back stateside, though, I finally could. I had started to play around trying to figure out, you know, what's the deal with wraps. The city that I was in North Dakota, there was actually a tanner, like a guy who does hides, like,
right,
yeah, 5 miles down the road. So I went and saw him one day, and I said, I need some leather. He's like, well, I have every kind of hide in here you could ever want. And I didn't even know what I wanted. So I bought like a big ass piece of cowhide, like a no shit 10-foot by 8-foot cowhide. And for 2 or 3 years, I would cut and sell leathers, which is, it's crazy because I put it on a .blogspot.com website.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like a plug and play site.
Yeah.
And to this day, in 2020, off of an ad that I wrote in 2007, I still get people every now and again who are emailing me saying, hey, I'd like to get a pair of cowhide wraps.
Wow.
Wow. You know, that's the thing I was talking about with earlier, is that you do the work now and it will just pay you for all this time. And of, yeah, course, guys, I do not have wraps. I cannot help you. I don't know where you guys get your wraps from anymore. Robert Najedli brings me a pair of wraps every couple months when I blow a pair up. Robert, okay, always seems to have them. I have no idea where he gets them from. So I've now got my own home gym set up. I'm in a completely different work schedule. I'm in a completely different, just everything in my life looks quite different. So now I've got time to start training and preparing. So I think, let me think. I had contacted James Smith. So dieselcrew.com used to be James Smith, who started his own strength and conditioning company, like Diesel Strength and Conditioning. And then, yep, you had Jed Johnson. So those two guys worked together. And I'll tell you, during those years, those guys made some absolutely incredible products. If you ever look back through and you look at the stuff that they collaborated on, unbelievably great products. So, yep, I had picked up the bending manual, and that was the only thing I could find anywhere that accurately described it. You'd see pictures online of guys doing bends, but the succession of photos did not make it clear how their body mechanics were moving.
Right.
Like when John Brookfield first showed off how he was bending red nails, the general impression you would get examining the photos was he was an underhand grip and he was almost just pushing down over his belly. Okay, I've never seen anybody bend a red nail that way. And I don't think anyone can.
Yeah.
Not at the belly button, not down like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it was kind of a mysterious thing. Smitty sends me a set of leather wraps. And I remember the first time I put leathers on a red nail compared to wrapping those blue wraps on them, it instantly was like a game on thing for me. So the very first time that I pulled a red nail up under my neck and hit it, it folded instantly. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I get it. So this whole thing is a wrap game.
Yeah.
Well, it was funny because at the time, Cody, it made me think when I first saw steel bending, I said, that's a trick.
Yeah.
And when I say trick, I don't mean it in a trick is this. A trick is when I can't do something and you can show me one thing and all of a sudden I can do it. That's a trick.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference, is that, you know, you can't, like, there's no trick to squatting 700 pounds. If you can't squat 700 right now, I cannot get you there in a conversation. Well, with steel bending, some of the elements of steel bending, it is a bit of a trick. So I get these leather reps, and I'm in business now. I go through a period of time working my overhand. And the game that I would play is I'd take a given bar, bend it in leather, and then bend it in suede, and then bend it back on blue pads, and then start back up. So I was always working a regression of padding, because padding to me seemed to be where the monkey business of steel bending comes into play.
Yes.
Going into 2008, I had, I think it was either end of seven or beginning of eight, it was somewhere near. I started working more reverse bending and underhand bending. With the big trend that I saw was at that time, there was a couple spots online that there was a pretty good community going where guys were interacting with each other. They were posting bends. We were reviewing bends. We were talking shit. We were keeping lists. It was fun. So observationally, I noticed that a lot of guys would really get up and running with their overhand bends, especially when the stock was between 6.5 and 6 inches, and really especially when they started to double up on the leathers. So what you started to see was there was this division that was popping up. You had guys that were just seeing who could bend the biggest stuff with the biggest leathers, that kind of went off this way. You had guys doing crazy minimal pad bends. There was a whole stretch of time that we were running contests with guys where it would be like one blue wrap rolling the nail in it.
Yeah.
And you bend it this way. Then I started to do some long bars. I started to do horseshoes, and I feel like it really started to take off for me as I was doing more and more styles of bending.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the first thing I would say from my story is, in the beginning, you're probably going to see one kind of bend, and that either is cool to you or it is not cool to you. Doesn't matter, whatever. If it's cool to you, try out the other styles for a while. And particularly for a lot of you new guys that have only been doing this a couple of years, you got to work the reverse, the underhand bends. You really need to learn how to bend overhand, what we call slim style, which is minimal padding, hands completely on the bar. So you're not pistol gripped where the bar sits like this. So it's hands on the bar.
Right.
And then the bend is done in profile away from the body. If you guys would get that down, you would have fewer injuries. So Fat Bastard Barbell had a really fun active cert list. I started working my way up through that. And the biggest shift for me came, I basically had a month period that I felt like I'd hit all these steel bending goals that I'd set for myself.
Yeah.
And then I started doing more performances. And it's a completely different deal, because here's the thing, is if I had to come to an event that you were at and I had to entertain you guys, and if I was going to bend anything, I'm only going to basically bend one thing. Can you guess what I would bend if I came out to show you guys any kind of steel bending?
Are you talking to anything at all?
Yep. What if there's one, I'm going to bring one thing in my bag to bend. I'm going to do 10 different feats of strength today, but I'm only bending one thing. What is it?
Probably a wrench. Would be my guess.
A wrench ain't bad, but the problem is a wrench, in my opinion, for some people is too big of a jump, and they assume you messed with it.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to bring a 70-penny nail.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to bring a 7-inch spike. When I hold it up, everybody in the room sees what that is. They see the point. They know that a big nail like that is strong.
Okay.
And then I'm probably going to take a piece of a paper towel or a little handkerchief. I'm gonna use the most minimal padding that I can.
Yeah.
I'm gonna wrap it around my hand and hand it to somebody. And I'm gonna watch them try to pull it apart as they go around the room, and I keep my performance moving.
Yeah. So,
and I say that because I originally tried to do a couple of events where I would come out and do like there was this biker bar that they would have me on Friday nights, and they would have just different things going on. They liked having that out. I was selective duty at the time, so they were really cool to me in that respect. I come out one night and I really wanted to give him a good show. So I brought out a Fat Bastard Barbell 7-inch stainless steel 5/16 bar.
Yeah.
Now the shiny bastards are so strong that yeah. for a lot of people, like you could have them stand on a plate, pin the bar down, put a chain on the top and try to deadlift it. The average dude ain't going to even move it with a deadlift. Like yeah. it is a stout bar. Bend the stainless steel bar. And a couple of days later, it was sitting up with some of the stuff I did. And they said, we thought you were going to do some big bends. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, you just came off this little piece of stock and bent it. I yeah. said, dude, that's the hardest thing you guys have ever seen me do. They said, no, it's not. When you yeah. bend those big spikes, how do you not put the spike in your hand? And it's like, oh, that's the thing. Right. Yeah. So it's a perceptual game. I say all that because I basically went in a path where I moved more to being, to me, it's more impressive if something is done so quickly and so casually that you have to like, whoa, what just happened here? Then they're filming and it's like 3 minutes of wrapping and then it takes them 8 minutes to bend the bar. Like that's fine for the pure fan of steel bending, but for yeah. crowds of people, they don't give a shit about that. They don't, and they don't get that steel is different. And your average person's, they're not a builder. They don't know what properties the metal are. So none of that matters.
Yeah.
And then for me, I transitioned more into grip sport.
Uh-huh.
So since 2010, let's see, I bend 1 to 3 bars every 8 to 12 weeks. Okay. Like 2 weeks ago, Robert Najedli and Tanner Merkel were over. We did a bunch of training out in my shed. It was like 100 degrees up there. We go out to the patio. We're sitting in the pool.
Yeah.
Had a couple beers. And I said, Rob, wrap me up a red nail. Grab the red nail, wrap it over the side of my hand. I'm done bending for the next 4 or 5 weeks. That's it.
Is that when you put S in it?
That was a couple months back on the patio. I'm still working on a good S bend. It is so hard to do. And the thing is I need to have a lot of things right before I even try it, or you just don't get anywhere. Because you know, you figure out a 7-inch piece of stock, the first bend needs to be no more than 3 inches.
Right.
Or it ain't gonna work.
Yeah.
But most of the time for me, I do 1 to 2 bars reverse style at a pretty good intensity. I'll do another bar underhand as an off thing. I haven't bent anything overhand harder than a cut red nail though in probably 5 years.
Let me ask you about that. It seemed like pretty early on you were attracted to reverse and double underhand. Was that just because it was harder, or did you see some physical benefit from doing that?
It was a combination of 3 different things. It's a great question. So number one, on overhand, I had great success. So I've done a 6-inch shiny. I've done the big grade 5s. So those at, I think, 7 and cut to 6.5, the big grade 5. I've done 3/8, hot rolled, cut to a bunch of lengths.
Uh-huh.
I've had a pretty good kink on a King of All Bastards 3/8 cold roll. Didn't close it, but pretty good bend. Real good bend on like a 1/2-inch drill bolt. That was a hardened one. That was one of the hardest bends I ever did. It looked like a funny banana shape, but man, it was so stupid. I thought I was going to break my hands doing it.
Yeah.
But here's what got my attention when I say the strength thing. So, and this was true in 2008 and it's true in 2020. Most of the time, the guys who bend the biggest steel overhand and multiple leather have actually very poor upper body strength. And they usually have a really big disparage in their other bending styles. The formula to get hurt in any physical endeavor is to be so strong going in this direction and so weak going in this direction.
Yeah.
So the problem, you know, like there was a strongman competitor. He's just a normal guy out in Pennsylvania. He used to be really active online. He was kind of one of the first guys doing grip contests. He was out there doing grip contests with Jed in like 2002, 2003. Okay.
Okay.
Well, they had a contest where they did some overhand stuff wrapped up. And I don't know if his bar was work hardened. I don't know if he did a serious upper body session a day or two before. But when he went down to kink this bar, he separated his pec tendon. And you can see from that moment in time forward, his training was never really there again.
Wow.
Like, dude was super strong, but he never got to show what he was with. Well, show me anybody that has torn any tendons or ligaments bending in minimal padding. You won't, because the pain is so severe here that you're not going to separate up here where it actually matters.
It's like the governor, right?
and that's the thing is, and it's good to have a governor, because we're talking about you versus an inanimate object. It doesn't give a shit what's going on with you. You either move it or you don't. What I would encourage every bender out there, if you guys want to be bending for a long period of time, because what I have noticed is, comparatively speaking, I started bending in my early mid-20s, and coming up on 40, I'm still bending. Whereas a lot of you that I used to bend with, you're not bending anymore. Here would be my progression for somebody. What bar can you do in all three styles? And don't go too far away from that until you're moving them in all three styles. Wow. So if you're someone and you can bend cut 5/16 steel overhand and double leathers, and you cannot reverse a grade 8, and you can't even do a grade 5 underhand, you're starting to screw up. You're going to get into trouble. One of the weirdest things that you'll see, Cody, as you get to meet a lot of people, is that there are guys who can double overhand bend incredibly redonkulous steel, but like their military press is nothing to talk about. Their bench press, nothing to talk about. In fact, for a lot of them, they have almost no display of upper body strength in the ways you typically expect. Well, whether or not it is a trick at that point, it certainly looks like a trick. So to me, if you want to say, I'm going to bend steel to get strong, don't put yourself in a predicament where you're only using leverage in basically a pipe to do the bend, because you're not getting anything out of it.
Interesting.
So my challenge would be, for a lot of you guys, it's not just like, can you do the red nail list? It's, can you do the red nail in all three styles?
Yeah.
Not just the bastard list. It's bastard in every way. If you look on the FBB site today, the bastard in every way list is so incredibly short. But no surprise, you're going to know every name on that list.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be the point, guys. Like, I think there's only two guys that have ever done shiny bastard in every way. Whoa. There's only one or two guys that have ever done a hex bastard in every way. And there's only like less than 10 that provided the certified proof to be bastard in every way. Now, obviously, there's more of you out there that can do it, but you're not doing it. Or at least if you are doing it, nobody knows about it. And I would like to see more people get on that list.
Damn. I'm going to take your advice, man, because my double overhand is certainly much stronger than any of my other ones.
Here's the first change. Just go from where you're pistol gripping your wraps to actually grabbing the bar. And what that's going to require is, now you're going to have to kink the steel with both wrist action and upper body compression.
Yeah.
When you're pistol gripping at the end of the pipes, there's two things going on. You've got wrap torque because you've made the bar 7 or 8 inches longer almost between that. So we just went from 7 inches to 14. And the other thing is they're actually getting it where they're taking their wrist out. There'll be no kinking action of the wrist. It's just going to be elbow drive.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that it's bad, but if you're trying to get a chest workout and you want to be unconventional, go grab a heavy gripper and just chest crush it. It is safer than bending steel, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Don Cummings, when he was on, he said to be good in every style. So I've definitely been keeping that in mind. And, you know, similar to, like, we spoke about jiu-jitsu before we started recording, but one thing that has kept me interested in jiu-jitsu for this long is the fact that you can wear the gi or you cannot wear the gi, or you could practice your wrestling that day or practice some MMA. There's multifacets to it, you know? And I see that with bending as well, with all the different styles, changing up the pads and stuff like that. And that's something that's kept me interested heavily so far. And I foresee a long time in the future too, is that you can, you know, if you get burnt out on one style, you can switch it up and do another. And then you introduce the snapping into it. And that's a whole endurance thing as well. I find it so cool.
So I like a comparative, because so many of us who've done this have done some kind of a grappling, so this will make sense. Okay, if you think like a dome, okay, the foundation of all grappling is going to be wrestling. The essentials of wrestling, essentials of takedown, escape, and pin. And the thing is that takedown, escape, and pins work whether you're striking, not striking, in a gi, not in a gi. So that's what always works. It's actually a really small circle of skills, but I call it foundational because it always works. Yeah. We then could go up to no-gi techniques that work even when you're striking me as I'm trying to get you into position and I have no grip on a sweaty body, but they still work. That's your next level up. And then you get into like gi techniques, and even in gi techniques, it's like there's stuff in the core of judo that works in sambo and jiu-jitsu and judo. And then there's techniques that are above it. Like a lot of sambo techniques don't work in jiu-jitsu because they don't choke each other. Right. And the other thing is some of the footlocks don't work because in jiu-jitsu, you can attack them another way. So my point is as you get to a level of specificity, you get into these badass techniques that actually only work under very particular circumstances.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like I hope a bunch of these guys don't try to come get me, but like I see a lot of that crazy 10th planet stuff.
Yeah.
And I always think that looks awesome in a match when we've all agreed on that. But would you really want to roll yourself around a parking lot at 2 a.m. with somebody, you know what I mean? Looking for this crazy sub when it's like, no, man, get into side mount and smash that motherfucker. What works here? So let's talk about steel bending.
Yeah.
The foundation for steel bending, in my opinion, and it's because even when you guys are old and broke, you'll be able to do this, is braced bending, starting from the over the leg position and learning to leg crush. So it's the braced over the leg and leg crush is what you'll be able to do even at your most advanced age or injury. So the guy who's coached me up the most over the years for steel bending is at an age, he's advanced in his age, and he's got a shoulder injury that has stopped him from being able to do this for almost 20 years. He's had a couple bicep injuries over the years. And that took him down the point where for a long time he could bend this way. Amazingly, he could bend this way. This wasn't so great. Over the leg is fine. Leg crush is super strong. Even now, when he doesn't train it, leg crush is still within 80% of what it's ever been. So I say that to you guys because like your brace bending doesn't even require padding the same way that other things do. So learn to do that. Learn to do your underhand and your reverse because it's not going to dick up your pec tendons. When you want to do overhand, understand that there's a lot of factors that can modify it. And the more that your bend is related to padding, the higher the total risk of a bending ending injury that you'll have. Because the kind of things that will break when it breaks, it's going to be terrible. Y'all, it's going to be terrible. You have a bicep injury, pec tendon injury. If you guys end up breaking one of these ligaments off, it's going to be absolutely terrible and you're never going to come back. And the biggest problem, Cody, is that they rush. They see steel bending today and within 3 weeks, they're trying to take down stainless steel bars and that. And just you go slow. It's so easy when you just go slow.
Wow. That's a really interesting point, just because you think as you add more wraps, you're actually being safer in a sense, but you're actually being much more dangerous.
I think it's quite dangerous. Now here's the deal. Okay. So if you had never bent a bar, and we have this all the time when we have guys come over for our grip crew. If you had never bent a bar before, here's how I'm going to set you up. I'm going to take a pretty decent leather wrap, single leather wrap. I'm going to grab a pretty moderate spike. I'm going to wrap it up for you. I'm going to hand it to you and I'm going to tell you what to do with it next. And then I'm going to have you try a different style. I'm going to have you try a different style. And the first thing I want you to see is that you can bend this bar. And then what we're going to do is we're just going to drop down a little bit. So I'd say, hey, hand me those kind of beat up wraps for this next one. And then you're going to see that you can do it, but you're going to feel the difference. And then we might go wrap it up in a blue wrap. And then you're going to bend it again and you're going to feel the difference. And the thing is it's like for a soft 60, the first time a lot of people try to do an underhand bend, it's probably painful. I remember it. It bothers your wrists. It bothers your hands. But you get a point where you'll see guys bare hand bending 60s all day this way and this way at this point. So the thing is the pain tells you when you're ready to go on. Because when this bend used to be really uncomfortable, and then it was only feeling pressure. And then now you're like, I'll tell you now, Don Cummings, when Don grabs a 60 penny spike and bends it, he doesn't even feel it. I guarantee that. If you had any amount of wrap on it where he knows it's not going to go into his hand, I guarantee you when Don folds a spike and crushes it, he doesn't even feel it anymore.
Yeah.
That's time.
Yeah.
Time bending brings you to that point. Tommy, some of the shit I've seen Tommy bend, it's funny because you'd look at that bend and it's like, dude, he's not, he didn't feel that amount of pressure in that overhand brace up thing because he's been doing it for years.
Yeah.
Robert, I saw Robert barehand a horseshoe. Actually, me and Don were in the same room for this, but I saw a 115-pound guy barehand bend a horseshoe and hard it. Who's been bending steel for 10 years. Wow. So that's a big thing for you guys is most of the time, if the bend looks fake to you, but you know the person who did it is real, the gap that on why you don't understand how that happened, it's time. More time changes everything with this because this tissue needs to get hardened.
Yeah.
And you can't rush it. If your plan is you're going to pound the shit out of your hands the first 6 months, you might just not ever bend again.
Yeah.
So it's a thing of don't hate your body because it's in its current condition, built it up the right way.
Wow. That's crazy, man. So how about before you found steel bending, you said you were doing a little kettlebells in the military. Did you grow up playing sports and lifting weights and stuff? Or what was your background like?
So for me, starting off was a lot of lawn work. A lot of lawn work. As a little kid, I was intimately familiar with the rake and the hammer and the pick and the garbage bags and the wheelbarrow.
Nice.
All those things were familiar to me. In high school, did some wrestling. We had weights class, and I was not a very diligent student. I knew I was going to join the service from okay. before I ever went into high school. That was my plan. So high school to me was a big fuck around period. I wasn't a bad kid, but I certainly was no great student. So for me, our school, I grew up in Michigan. We were able to start taking electives like weights classes and shit like that as soon as you had your science and math knocked out. So a lot of weightlifting, which at the time was more, you know, a dumb high school kid. Your person coaching you as a teacher who's trying to help the kids, but it's not like they know anything.
Yeah.
So, but I had some success. I can think of lifts that I did as a kid that I think were pretty good. Right before I enlisted in the Air Force, so I enlisted weighing like 178 pounds. And this was at 18. I wasn't able to actually enter till 19 because of a time delay for paperwork. But the same week that I went to MEPS and weighed in as a 6'2", 180, 177 pound kid, I was still able to deadlift at that age, 315 for a set of six. I had pulled 410, something like that. So I was over a double body weight deadlift as a kid. I think that's all right.
Yeah.
The first couple months of military services, you actually, if you go in shape, you typically come out in worse shape than it. Even for Marines, they'll tell you is that if you really worked hard to get ready for basic, there's just a lot of time standing around and getting yelled at, and you can lose pretty easily. I came out of basic weighing 171, which was the scrawniest I'd ever been in my life. Just a little scrawny guy. I got to my first duty station. We had a real nice weight room that was across from the barracks that I stayed in. So got back into weightlifting. The first couple of years of my early 20s were a little haphazard until I had found the Power to the People book that Pavel Satsalin wrote. And what that did was it presented programming in a more coherent way than I'd seen other people attempt to explain it.
Wow.
So my first tour in Iraq, I had great success running very much a deadlift, Turkish get up, a little bit of running, the minimal amount of calisthenics I needed that I thought I needed to do my job well. Just great success. Gained like 30 pounds over that deployment, came back. I remember I got back and I love the pictures of the time, like my neck looked so big to me compared to before I went. You saw that pulling weight off the floor. I bought my first kettlebell in 2004. I think Dragon Door was still shipping to APO then, but only up to the 28 kilos. So I had ordered a couple pairs of bells. When I came back from my first deployment, when you're deployed, you'll hear people say different things. Some people tell you that they don't spend any money and other people spend all their money. But in terms of what you have to buy on any given day, it's almost nothing. Like, you know, go buy a deodorant, razor, shaving cream and soap, and you're being provided your meals, you're being provided your place to stay. There's not a lot of entertainment unless you're online shopping. Online shopping was the new thing then. So I find this Australian distributor And the guy's like, dude, I can get you whatever amount of kettlebells you want, and I can send them up to Okinawa on a barge. Cool. So I bought kettlebells all the way up to 124 pounders, 56 kilos, had them all imported up to Okinawa, all delivered to my house, and then all moved with me over to North Dakota. And that's what I used to set up my first gym. Kettlebell lifting overall is like, man, it's one of those things. The way a lot of people currently show you guys how to do it, I think, is kind of crappy more and more. There's a sport side of it, and the sport competition will make a person very, very fit, very strong, but it's its own sport. It requires as much dedication as it would for jiu-jitsu, as it would if you wanted to learn to play golf. The lifting element of it, there's some people that they just show you basically power lifts using a little ball, not so effective, but there's some other things you can do with it that are really effective. So I do advocate that people check kettlebells out, but the thing is you got to get more creative, and you got to kind of look back before you had all these scrubs that were getting and teaching it, because the kettlebell world was like in the beginning in America, it's funny, cause it was all these gnarly ass, like just gnarly tough ass people started right. The whole circle. But as they started to do that big money grab, they started having more and more folks come out that had, you know, never had a hangnail or a splinter. Yeah. And they had to dumb down the course as time went more and more and more. And the last event that I went to that was a kettlebell thing was in beginning of 2010. And I can tell you, even from the first thing I ever did to that last thing, it was like noticeable that, oh man, you guys are making it easier to be here so that you get more people here. So I would advocate to people, if you want to learn more of that, look back to people who train more the way it was before they had an insurance adjuster come in and decide what would be safe to sell and not so safe to tell people about. But I think they're great. I really do.
Yeah.
And you know, the bigger change that came for me was coming out of, so I guess probably a lot of people find grip lifts and then they see steel bending. That's what people tell me. Well, for me, it was kind of the opposite, where I saw the steel bending first,
yeah,
and then other pieces of it. And then I saw the other old timey feats of strength, like tearing decks of cards. There used to be a thing called a phone book. I don't know if any of you younger people have seen it, but they used to have a book that had everybody's name and number in it. Can't find them anymore, but that used to be a real cool feat. To legitimately tear it was a cool thing to see. I'm not talking about the pop in the book, but to just tear them in half, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I have a funny story, a little aside about that is, you know, I started tearing some cards and, you know, I tore a U-line catalog and I wanted to try a phone book. The U-line catalog was hard as hell because it's glossy.
Oh, yeah. yes.
But so my grandma had a county phone, Westchester County phone book, so I could do that. And I'm still trying to find a big ass yellow one. Chris Ryder sells them. He'll sell you a box of them for $40 or something, but I can't.
What a fucking scam. So he was given a bunch of shit that he sells. Now, what a scam. That same guy has a pile of horseshoes as big as a fucking shed in his backyard, and he wouldn't sell them to anybody the years that we're contacting.
Oh, really?
It's crazy to me. He's one of these people. He thinks he knows secrets. Hey, Cody, don't believe anybody who thinks they know secrets.
Yeah.
If somebody says there's something they're not going to show you about a bend or whatever, that is all bullshit. All bullshit. It's all bullshit.
I've been around martial arts long enough to know about the secretiveness.
Right? Five finger palm, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The invisible jiu-jitsu, all that bullshit. It's all good marketing.
Yeah. So I'm still trying to track down a big yellow one so I can do a proper phone book. But I put a call out on Facebook. Nobody has them.
You won't, because they've been out of print at this point, especially so all the places that had cool phone books to tear, the very first move they made is that as they got bigger and bigger and bigger for businesses and people moving in, they'd split them, right? So then we had yellow pages and we had the blue pages or the white pages kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then as the yellow page neighborhoods were getting bigger and cities expanded, they started to split them down to smaller books with the assumption that, hey, if you're in New York City, you might only want a Manhattan book or only a book for Brooklyn instead of trying to keep them all.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then as soon as everybody was carrying a little everything in the world device in the hand, it just became obsolete.
I know. Yeah. It's crazy.
The feat's done. I'll tell somebody, if somebody wanted to be able to show that they were the best terror ever, though, this is what I would say. if somebody could show me going into Office Max or Home or Office Depot or whatever, picking up right from the box a Rima printer paper.
Oh yeah.
Paying for it and tearing it in half, not before you fuckers can get home and bake it or dry it or whatever. They do tricks, Cody. It's pathetic. They doctor and fake these things. I've never seen anybody tear a Rima printer paper, and I don't think I ever will.
Damn.
So even half a Rima printer paper would be harder than probably the hardest phone books.
Yeah.
So if you just really wanted to get that strength, that would be what I'd say to do is take a look at things like some of the auto mechanic books that you'll see where they're categorizing parts.
Yeah. You know,
like they'll have like the 2017 edition at like AutoZone and they don't need it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that'll be close because the paper feels like Bible paper.
Right,
like it's
right.
A glossy cover, but the paper's super, that could be all right with it.
Yeah, that'd be something close.
License plate tearing is kind of it's a similar motion. It's a little bit more accessible, but it's the same thing. Old aluminum license plates or the old thin steel. It's kind of one of those bullshit feats because when you see someone do it, it's like, if you've never done it, you think it's neat, but
it's so funny.
There's real feats of strength. And then there's a bunch that are, okay. So here's the other thing. We'll talk about penny bending for a second.
Yeah.
So there's probably 5 or 6 guys that have actually bent a penny ever, like stainless steel. And the way Stanley did it was absolute madness. I don't even know if he was using hand padding.
Yeah.
Now, Stanley would take the penny and would warp it this much and would say, look at what I've done. And it's because none of you are going to do that anyway. So why should I taco it?
Okay.
The smallest person I've seen legitimately do a penny is Robert. Robert can do a penny with a little piece of wrap that is this big, where all it was folded over the penny. There's no ability to torque it.
God damn.
There's a guy, Scott St. Vincent, who lives in Michigan, who's a retired firefighter. And he got to the point that he was absolutely destroying these pennies. Complete legit bends. Chris Ryder's done pennies completely legit. Now, beyond those 4 or 5 guys, most of the guys that are doing them, here's what they're doing. They're taking a long wrap.
Yeah.
They're going over the nail and crisscrossing. And what they're doing is they're pulling on the wraps. Y'all, that shit ain't penny bending. What are you doing?
Yeah.
It's the wrap that did the bend. The wrap's the MVP there. And that's kind of thing is some of the coolest steel bends that have ever been done. It's how simple it was that they just went and they did it. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
Like when I asked Dennis Rogers, what is the craziest bend you've seen somebody do that just startled you? It's funny because the story is completely not startling.
Yeah.
Except when you really think about it. Dennis is riding in the back seat of a passenger car. John Brookfield's in front of him driving. Okay. Somebody else is in one of the other seats over here. So as they're going along, they're all talking and bullshit and all that fun. And Dennis said something to John about doing a bend. And John had told him, wrap me up a nail. So as he's driving, Dennis rolls up the nail. He starts to pass it up to He goes to pass it up to John. So John takes the spike. He's using his knee to drive the steering wheel behind his head, just crushes the nail and hands it back to him, just like this.
What the hell?
And the first time I heard that, I said, man, that's wild. So I actually practiced that for a couple of months. David Whitley and Dennis Rogers were having a workshop in Austin. And I showed up and I said, Dennis, I want to show you something. Wrap me up a nail. And I got to where I could easily crush behind my head. And the funny thing is he's like, I like that more than when you're out doing half-inch bolts.
And yeah.
It's like, that's the thing that I like about it. If we're going to talk performance-wise, do something so fast that it startles the people.
Yeah.
Not something crazy. And not something that's a trick, y'all. Like, tricks are for kids. Certainly not for adults.
You know what's funny is kind of just on the point that you've been making as far as, like, what the layperson is impressed by. You know, I've been doing some of this stuff and tearing some cards, throw it on Facebook, bend a 6-in, a 10-inch wrench braced, throw it on Facebook, got a little hype, you know. Then I picked up a nonstick pan from the grocery store and rolled this thing up.
Oh, easy.
It was honestly so easy. And it was, I felt a little silly throwing it up, but I threw it online and this thing hit. Everybody could not believe it. And I'm going, the wrench was 10 times harder than this, you know, but people were completely impressed by the pen. I was like,
it's, honestly, you know, and the whole thing, the internet changed everything in all the wrong ways. Okay. Because the first thing I'd say is this, is if you're someone who has ever shared a legit feat of strength you did, and you really worked at it, and you really, you know, you wanted to show that to everybody. If you put it online, most likely the only comments you got initially were people just talking shit. And there's a couple things you got to understand about that. The first thing is there's a group of people in our country called 11 to 13 year old boys, and they have nothing to actually do other than get online and spray all their angst on everybody because they have no power, right? A 12 year old in person, even if they say anything to you, it's like, ah, shut up. So the thing I'll tell you is a lot of people get discouraged by online comments. And the thing that I would say is this, is that if you're someone and you can bend a 60 penny spike in under 10 seconds and you can do it nice, where you don't look like you're gonna stroke out, go to a family function and bend that nail in front of them and watch how everybody wants to try and they like it. People love strength. Yeah. All people, that we love to see good demonstrations of strength. I think you never blend a trick with real, so don't do anything that is a trick. Do the real stuff. And don't worry about if it's the hardest version of it or whatever. But instead, it's a thing of a presentation. So, and this is the thing that I feel like the grip guys who get into steel bending don't get, that the performing strongman could explain to you. If you see someone who's on stage, a guy like a Dennis Rogers, a David Whitley, when they're up talking and they bend the nail, it's not about them bending a nail. That is a delivery device to have the attention of the audience to deliver a speech. You know what I mean? Like Dave will go out for his shows. He goes to these universities and he's telling a story as he's rolling up the bar.
Yeah.
And as he's bending the spike, see, the spike bend is really the apex point of a story.
Yeah.
Like Dave does the chest expansion chain breaking, but the story that he tells with it is so captivating.
Yeah.
Just, you couldn't turn away from it as he's setting up for it. Even if in your mind, breaking that chain is either hard or not hard. Whatever you think about the chain break doesn't even matter because it's a pivotal moment of the story. So for some of you guys, the reason you're not getting a good reception is that there's no story attached to it. And sometimes there's no story attached to it. It's just a look at this. But you got to remember, bending a wrench is outside of the average person's belief that a human can do.
Yeah.
But for them, the first thing they have to do is they have to reject it. No, that's not real, Cody. You're doing some kind of game when you do this. And it's like, no, dude, it's real. But what I would tell a lot of the guys is you'll find that if you actually go in front of real people, not virtual, not YouTube comments, not Facebook, that actually most people are the funny thing is when you do a real good feat of strength the right way, it moves people. It moves them because you're expanding their mind.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like card tearing, and the reason I like card tearing is because number one, every human being in the world, well, most humans in the world have held a deck of cards. So you understand what they are and what they're not. I can get a deck of cards here in America anytime I want to, anywhere I want to, right? Yeah. I'm always one gas station stop away from a new deck of cards. And it's a brand new product, plastic wrapped, that they can see that I've not doctored.
Yeah.
The thing is about card tearing is that it's the easiest feat of strength to show someone because you hand them a deck of cards, which they've already seen before. You ask them to tear it, and then they won't.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know this. So History Channel did a very, very entertaining show called like Strongest Man in History. So they've got Eddie Hall and Brian Shaw and Nick Best. All these guys are coming out. Yeah. One of the episodes they did was card tearing.
Yeah.
Now, here's the deal. Quantifiably, all of those men are physically stronger than me in almost every way, but not in every way. Because I've seen them tart carry cards. I could probably rip 50 decks of cards consecutively in half in the same amount of time that those guys monkeyed around with one pair.
Now, let me ask you this real quick.
Crazy to see.
this goes back to something you said before in regards to raps and tricks, so to speak. Yep. So I feel like you could make the argument. Believe me, like tearing cards is hard. You know, it took me a while to learn how to do it. But just that, I had to learn how to do it. Right. So do you think that falls under the trick category or not? I'm just curious. I mean, still bad either way.
The way that I tear, it's not a trick for two reasons. Is number one, I'm going to show you exactly what I'm doing before I do it, and I'm going to have you position the exact same way. So like, okay. So here's the deal. If you guys don't know this, when you're looking at a flat deck of cards, there's two things that are stopping the average person from tearing it. The first thing is they don't pinch, they crush.
Yeah.
And if you know anything about building, okay, a flat object cannot handle as much structural load as a curve. So an arch is very strong. So when you crush a deck of cards and turn it into an arch, you just made the material incredibly strong, comparatively speaking. It's not going to want to tear as much.
Yeah.
Because you just changed the structure. So I'm going to tell you, don't squeeze them, pinch them.
Yeah.
And what do I know? I know that all of you guys have pathetic thumbs. You can't pinch shit. So I know they can't do this well. And the next thing I'm going to ask you to do is to pinch the deck this way. And I know you can't do that. And now I'm going to ask you to keep that pinch. And I'm going to need you to use your wrist, because I know that, I mean, man, especially in America, I've traveling to other countries where people had a more physical life.
Yeah.
You just see there's a difference. But most Americans and most American men who lift weights will tell you, I got weak wrists, bro, which to me, I've never said. I can't even imagine saying that. Yeah. I've always trained my wrist. I have a world-class wrist because I understand strength.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to ask you to pinch, and I'm going to need you to turn your wrist. So I'm asking you to destroy this object using your fingertips and your wrist strength. No trick whatsoever, because I'm showing you all the angles. Now, okay. What I have seen people do, Cody, is I've seen them take a deck of cards, hand it to the person, and say, tear it in half. And the people intuitively, like, they're doing all the wrong things with it. But yeah. I'll tell the person exactly what's going on, and that's because I'm tearing incredibly high quality decks of brand new cards that have had no weird temperature, moisture modification. I didn't bake them in an oven or any of that other stuff.
I've never even heard that, man. I didn't know
the tricks people do, it's so much more than you'd think.
Yeah, damn.
And it's so silly, because the thing is as soon as we catch you doing one trick, we now go back and doubt everything we've ever seen from you.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is this that I would say, so the interesting thing is there are some people who would tell you that I've done some of the best performances tearing cards. Now, to be fair, there's some guys that have done things like they tore one deck of cards into so many pieces. I don't do none of that shit. If I can't tear it in half in front of you in seconds, I'm not interested. Because what I think would impress you is I take that deck of cards and in one hit, it's in half and I drop half. And in one hit, it's into a quarter. And in one more hit, it's down to an eighth. And that happens so fast that if you're in the audience not paying attention to the first tear, you won't even know what just happened.
Yeah.
It's a different way to do the feat. But cool. Why is it not a trick? It's because the same guy who did that also record-setting two-hand pinch lifts, pinch muscle-ups, pinch back lever hangs. I've demonstrated that me training these motions for years has built a hand that is – has been incredibly powerful, getting better all the time. If they're doing a trick, you'll see that not only are they not getting stronger, but it's not translating to anything. And Okay. That's what makes me wonder about the heavy, heavy pistol grip style double overhand of leathers.
Sure.
For some of these guys, it's crazy because they're bending bars that you would think is not even mechanically possible to move as a human, and they can't bench press 300 pounds.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a weird ass thing. And for some people, there's other factors going, but like, here's an example of it. You look at a guy like a Tommy Jennings, Aaron Corcoran, Don Cummings, all of them crazy overhand strength. The other thing is that all three of them have in common is anytime they choose to dabble in, say, the bench press, right? This versus this, pretty comparable. They do extremely well for their size.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Like the, last summer, let's see, so what was it? Last fall, we're all at the Metroflex in Fort Worth. Tommy had been doing just the tiniest little bit of bending. He wasn't training, though, because it's night schedule.
Yeah.
We go up there. Tommy brought his slingshot up there. So I could confirm Tommy had benched two or three times before this workout over the month, but he's pretty infrequently. Tommy puts on a slingshot, hits like a 365 or a 370 easy. for someone who doesn't bench, that's not bad. And yeah, the same weekend, he was just, these big ass steel bars they had, like they were big grade fives, crushing them. That's what you'd expect to see. When I see somebody who's bending big, huge steel and they have no other upper body strength, it makes me wonder what's going on there.
Yeah.
Because for me, I could show you on film, okay, this was when I was doing my very best overhand steel bends. This is what my shoulder press looked like. And you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes sense to me that a guy could do this, could do that. It doesn't make sense though. Go ahead.
Let me ask you this too. So in my studying of like the old time strongmen and stuff like that, and in the Mighty Adam documentary and stuff, they talk about, and we mentioned Governor before in as far as the pain on your hands, but it's been said that we have a mental governor, right? That we only use X amount of strength and we have the potential to unlock, like, I guess the other 40% or something like that. So would you say a guy like Tommy or yourself that have experience lifting super heavy, do you think some portion of that is just that you have more of that uncharted territory in your brain unlocked, or do you think it's just strictly from hard training and heavy training?
I think it's a combination of things. So here would be the biggest factor. So the first thing is going to be, what is their bone structure like? That's the part you don't get to really pick. Good job picking parents. ligaments and tendons are associated with that, because sometimes you'll see someone that their bone structure is not that impressive, but they have good tendons. I'm not particularly big, but I got really good tendons. For some people, it is correct training over time. For some people, I think it's a little bit of a psychological access. So within those four areas, you see a kind of a blending of why this guy's stronger, that guy. Like a guy like Stanley Steele.
Yeah.
When you look at Stanley at his very strongest, you know, Stanley's kind of down here in the South, we say that he's touched, he's special, if you know what I'm saying. He doesn't know that he can't do something.
Yeah.
He just doesn't know. He would grab steel bars that I would say, oh, that shit's unbendable. Don't even mess with that. And he'd warp it. Just so powerful, so much power with no brakes on it. For other people though, you know, the thing is their fear of a thing is really what the whole, like the Mighty Adams whole thing on how he would talk people through to be able to do or not do different things. I feel like a lot of that dealt with confidence and fear. Like if we're at a pool and you're trying to get me to do a somersault into the pool and I'm afraid of hitting my head, right? You're never going to see me do what you're asking me to do until you confirm in my mind that I'm not going to hit my head. And it's the same way for this. If someone's got a steel bar and they're saying, no, man, this thing's going to go right through my hand, they're not really going to hit it the way you're asking them to hit it.
Yeah.
Confidence is a factor. If someone has had a previous injury or they believe they'll be injured again, they usually will hold back. The other thing too, that's so key to keep in mind, guys, is that everybody loves to talk about the stories of when people did express, you know, almost that superhuman level of ability in an emergency. What they never talk about is what the physical consequence was of that moment. So the thing about it is, there's the story of the lady who was able to move the car, and people say lift a car. She didn't lift the car. The car is pinned and she grabbed the fender and pulled it up just enough for the kid to scoot out, which is unbelievable. No, she didn't lift the car. But the point is this, the same lady who moved the car to get it off the kid had ripped muscles and fractured bones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's the thing, is when you hear somebody do something incredible, there's usually an incredible cost. So with that,
that's a really interesting point.
Yep. And here's the other thing that a lot of you don't know. The Mighty Adam, for everything he did that was legit, was a notorious liar and exaggerator. Okay.
I'm fine with that. All those vaudevillian era guys.
Oh dude, the first lie that they all tell is they all say they're older than they are.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh my God, that guy's 94 years old and he did this. And it's like, well, he's actually 77, but whatever. So yeah, notorious liars. And they're showmen. So it's not to get into something where one of you guys starts emailing me that I won't even read your emails. Don't bother. that now I accused him of this. Here's the deal. I know they lie. They exaggerate. Yeah. A thing was legit here, but the story gets expanded over the years, and how they handle it is they don't address it until it gets to the point that, like, okay, so here's a fact. Dennis Rodgers held with straps, and he will tell you the fact. He held two planes from taking off. They were prop-driven, like Air Force trainers, but they're propeller aircraft. Uh-huh. Over the years, that story has become that Dennis held two jet aircraft, which no one has ever done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So he will tell you, no, I stopped two propeller planes from taking off. And, and I, you know, I held them for 20 seconds or something.
Yeah.
No, he did not stop like two F-15s or something. But that thing is people, the story grows from people like, that guy stopped two planes. And it's like, yes, he did. But do you know what kind they were? The motorcycle feat. There's a lot of guys that they do the motorcycle feat. Well, here's the deal. The motorcycle feat of stopping the motorcycles, it only works under a couple of key conditions. You got to be on the right kind of ground. Because here's the reality. If a Harley Davidson actually had traction and you tied yourself to that bike when that dude hits the bike, it's going to tear your fucking arms off. So you'll notice they do them in particular parking lots. And what you'll notice is the guy stopping the bikes will be covered in asphalt. And it's because the bike is not able to get enough bite to go, and it actually is kicking up asphalt at them. Completely legit the way it's being done, but it's not what people think.
Right.
I'm trying to think of a couple other big examples that we see of things like that.
Well, I heard Thomas Inchwood had a hole drilled in it, so when he was actually
guys, an absolute fraud. Inch, and I'll tell this, anybody wants to debate it with me. So between me and Tanner Merkel, the only feat done with the inch that we have not done between either one of us, and keep in mind, we're both nearly 100 pounds lighter than he was, okay? So I've seen Tanner do everything with the inch except a one-hand clean or snatch of it yet. And he will get it. He will get it. I have no doubt.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. When you look at the videos, when you see Thomas clean the inch, supposedly, where he claims it was his 80-kilo belt, and then go look at Mark Henry when he cleaned the inch.
Yeah.
Go look at the video of when Jesse Pannonen cleaned the inch. Go look at the video of when Jed Johnson cleaned the inch. Go look at the video of when who's that big fucker from California who almost got two of them? The name escapes me. Okay, but here's the point. Go look at everyone who actually cleaned the inch in the modern era, and you'll notice the technique and the path of the bell was 100% different than what he showed. That's how you know that shit is fake.
Yeah.
The way he showed it, the swing he does with it, I think it's funny because, like, Tanner, either one of us, we can pick up an inch and just hold it. Tanner's got a video online where he holds an inch for like 50 seconds straight chugging a beer. The angle that he swings that bell, neither one of us can replicate. There are other ways we can get the bell way up, but it's a completely different angle.
Yeah.
Inch was definitely a fraud.
Yeah.
He may have had a lighter bell that he could clean, but when we talk about an 80-kilo bell, absolutely no way.
Yeah.
Absolute fraud. Kim Wood has the original inch dumbbell that he bought from David Prowse. David Prowse was a bodybuilder in England. He played Darth Vader.
Right.
Vader was a bodybuilder who had a voice actor by James Earl Jones. Prowse had the inch, and it's funny because the big claim to fame was that he could lift it one time, and that blew people's minds. So my point would be, at a time when it blew people's minds just to see it deadlifted, here we are now in 2020, there's a group of us that work with inch dumbbells all the time and can do all kinds of dumb shit. We still can't clean it the way it's shown on the video. Makes a fraud in my mind. You got definitely some kind of apparatus, some kind of nail that would be hidden and obscured from the outside. But the thing about an inch is this. Cody, whether or not you train grip, I could have you lift an inch dumbbell in 3 seconds if I allow you to take your free hand and put it on the globe and stop it from turning.
Right, right.
Because now it's just, can you pick up 170 pounds? And of course you can.
Yeah.
The challenge is the thumb component. There's no way inch could do that. There's absolutely no way.
Well, damn. Adam, I could talk to you all day, but I'm going to run you through the medley. Basically, this is a rapid fire series of questions. You ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
All right. Favorite thing to bend?
Definitely horseshoes. Favorite is horseshoes. Especially down here in Texas, everybody gets it when they see a horseshoe bend.
Hell yeah. I spoke to David Wigren yesterday, and
That motherfucker can bend some steel, dude.
He got me very fired up to bend some horseshoes and actually change the way I did it a little bit. And yesterday I snapped a horseshoe, which was definitely a difficult feat of endurance, which I was pretty fired up. My hands are all blistered today.
Literally, that is one of the hardest snaps you can do. Snapping a horseshoe, for as hard as it is to snap short steel or big steel,
yeah,
snapping horseshoes is unbelievably hard.
It was just an ultralight too, you know, St. Croix or whatever, but it was hard.
It was punishing.
I was sweating. All right, hardest thing to bend for you.
Hardest thing to bend for me that I've tried to do. I've got three horseshoes in my garage right now that I've moved, but only that far. And I'll tell you guys, the most frustrating thing is when it only moves the tiniest bit and never again, because it leaves you feeling like Captain America in the second Avengers, where he almost picked it up off the table and that made Thor so nervous. Like, that's the thing, like, oh my God, it moved, but not so. I've had a couple of these, like, they're like AB6s that somebody sent me. I mean, they're fucking retarded, like draft horse looking things.
Sure.
And normally I wouldn't even fuss with it, but I had a day that I really torqued on this thing and it moved the tiniest bit. And since then, for years, I've had times that I go pull on it. And I tell you, Cody, every time I really get to pulling on it, I'm starting to wonder if the steel's going to move first or if I'm going to separate a rib. it's like my boogeyman one. Like, man, I feel like I could open that more, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Terrible shoe.
All right. This is an interesting one for you. Strongest bending style for you as a well-rounded guy.
So comparatively speaking, I would say reverse is my strongest. You know, obviously the overhand bracket of bends, you're seeing way bigger bars bend.
Yeah.
I would not be comfortable showing up at an overhand steel bending contest with any kind of real plan to do well, but I would be very comfortable playing the game with almost anybody who's steel bending if we were going reverse, particularly reverse with more minimal padding, which is how I normally do it. Cool. I don't know how many guys have done like Hex Bastard in every way, but I know that I think I was the second right behind Mike Hadley. And the thing that I noted was, the same crushing strength that I built this way carried through for me for one arm pressing, for plate curling. For me, it's just a super strong position.
Awesome. How about weakest style?
Weakest style for me is probably the big bar bend style that you see the guys doing where they're going between the feet.
Yep.
Or between the hip. I don't train it that much. I think it's pretty impressive the way the guys are bending with it now. For my overall flexibility, I'm not too bad getting to over this way. But it's never felt very strong for me. I've never chased it.
Yeah.
I would say I would probably not do anything particularly impressive with that pull around the hip style unless I really trained it.
Gotcha. Something outside of training, bending, and strength sports that you enjoy?
Cooking.
Nice.
Oh, man. I am ferocious on that barbecue grill and in that kitchen.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, you kind of covered that. What's the one bend that got away? That horseshoe out there?
No, you know, I'll take the biggest one that I feel that was my bend that got away was I had a period of time right after I did my Hex Bastion every way, I started immediately looking at stainless. And I've never had more than maybe a 7 or 8 degree kink on a stainless steel bar from reverse position. I know it's mechanically possible. I know Paul Knight did it, but I don't know how much time I'd need to put into it to get that, but it always in my mind felt like the bar I was going to get. And it never went that way. Stainless flex is so hard. I feel like I'm starting to get it to yield and then it feels like it's right back on top. So for me, Shiny Bastard reverse, that was the one that got away. And I don't know if I would ever really go around to try to pick it up again.
All right, here's an interesting one. Who's the strongest person you know?
So contextually speaking, the strongest person I know physically in terms of all around, I would say is probably Nick McKinless from the UK.
Okay.
Out of everybody I see, Nick is the craziest. He's literally good at everything he does. Crazy. I mean, just amazingly good at everything he does. He was a contender for Britain's Strongest Man a couple times. And I think if he didn't have his job as like a professional stuntman and actor,
yeah,
would have been a very top tier strongman, even though he's a, you know, he's not 6'8", 300. He's more like 6'3", 220, but dude is unbelievably strong. Wow. Out of people that I work with every day, Tanner Merkel and I have been lifting for a couple of years now. Tanner has the distinction of being, he won every meet he went to last year, except against Carl Myerskoff, who's probably the strongest of the strong. So he was unbeaten in his weight class for 90 kilo, unbeaten for 100 kilo in the Armlifting Federation. And then on the GSI leg, he wins King Kong of Grip. So Tanner's the person who is literally the only guy I can think of besides Durniet that has beat me in this many contests. My 2019 season was I had one first place finish at the Olympia, and I had a third place finish at I had a second at the Arnold. Every other meet though that Tanner was at, I beat everybody there, lose to Tanner. Beat everybody there, lose to Tanner's grip is unbelievable. He's only 27 or 28. He's getting stronger every month. I think he's probably the most dominant grip athlete in the entire this part of the world, outside of someone like a Carl, who's just so unbelievably powerful. And then the final guy I want to throw out for you, Robert Najedli, weighing 115 pounds, can bend pennies, can bend red nails, can hard horseshoes, with a rock climbing background. He can do pinch grip pull-ups. First time I ever saw a pinch bar, he could easily do them. Front levers, planches, handstands. And the crazy thing is his day job, he is out walking in the sun here in Texas for 8 to 10 hour shifts, 6 days a week. So what's amazing is that Rob will work a 60 something week in 100-degree heat. Yeah. And when he comes over, he'll still pulverize decks of cards and bend horseshoes. Unbelievable.
What job is that? Like a forester or something?
He works with the power company doing meter readings here. And it's crazy because they'll tell him, go read 400 meters today. And that dude, like, he seriously walks out 8 to 10 miles a day in jeans, in a pair of boots, in this unbelievable heat we get out here. And then we'll still go trash steel at the end of it. Just unbelievably powerful for a size.
Yeah, I want to have Robert on the show for sure. I didn't realize he was a rock climber as well. Tanner's former rock climber too.
Correct.
Yeah,
I'm fine. Actually, I'll tell you the craziest thing about Rob is when you look at his size, dude, Rob was an airborne soldier.
Whoa. All right.
Rob told me when he would be on the plane getting ready to jump, when he would come out with all of his bags hooked up, because the way those guys do it is they got the chute, they got a bag in front, and then they got a bag that had between their legs plus their weapon. Yeah. Rob was like, yeah, man, I weighed like 108 pounds and all my gear weighed like 130. And he was jumping out of planes as a younger man. He's an interesting guy to talk. Dude, Rob was in Berlin just a year or two after the wall came down. And he could tell you some crazy ass stories of what that was like between that former Soviet Union and the NATO guys having to mingle. Like, just very interesting guy to know, man.
Cool, man. I want to get him on for sure. I'm finding that the common threads through everyone I've talked to is either powerlifting in some way, rock climbing in some way, and grappling in some way. These seem to be the areas, you know, maybe not everybody has all three, but just one of them I can count on. Pretty much anyone I talk to has done one of those things.
One of those ones.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to go that way. I mean, it would be kind of weird, right, if you had a series of guys. It's like, yeah, you know, I've been an accountant for 30 years, and one day I decided maybe there's probably accountants out there that want to do it. Who knows?
I love that Don is a lawyer. That's just strong-ass lawyer. So cool.
For real, right? Maybe the strongest lawyer I've ever heard of.
Yeah. Just like holding papers with like a cut palm, you know? All right. So what's the funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your time bending nails?
I think for a lot of people, it is just this kind of a marvel of like, what do you do? And the other thing that's funny is I've had a lot of people that like we talked about earlier, their first reaction is they think it's fake.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of times when I've shown steel bending, it's in a context where, okay, maybe they're at the crib, I have them put their hand on a York blob. I'll have them put their hand on one of my anvils. I'll put their hand on one of my dumbbells. And now we've established that, hey, these weigh what I told you they weigh. And then it will be, hey, try out a bar, bend a bar for me. And for a lot of people, I feel like it's an astonishment.
Yeah.
With a lot of men, what I've seen, though, is there's been a lot of guys that they will tell me later that they keep thinking about it more and more. And it's like, well, then let's get you doing it. Because I was the same way. You know, when I saw Dennis bend that wrench the first time, I thought, man, that can't be real. And then you start to ask yourself, well, what if it is real? What if that's how much you don't know? You don't know that whole thing is possible. Yeah. So I feel like for a lot of guys, I feel like it's probably more inviting than not. And that's what I would hope, is that more people get a chance to see it as they realize that, no, come on in here and try this thing out.
Yep. Yeah. Just one of the many parallels I find, you know, between jiu-jitsu and bending is like, you know, someone comes in their first day of jiu-jitsu and they realize there's this whole, no matter how tough they thought they were, they really don't know this. And there you're at the crossroads. You go, okay, I'm going to humble myself and learn this, or I'm going to hide from this and pretend it doesn't exist the rest of my life.
Then that would be the crossroad. It's either humility to go into a superior area, or it's going to be pride, and you'll be even more pathetic down the road when we find you later.
Yeah, exactly.
Jiu-jitsu is the best. It's funny how much steel bending and jiu-jitsu share that in common, because, man, especially some of you big guys out there that have never actually found out what it feels like to have a 140-pound man choke your ass silly. most of you big guys out there, your big ass literally counts for absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Especially if you're over 300 pounds, the deal is this. I bet I can weather the 30 seconds of endurance you have. I bet I can hold out, and then your big ass is mine. And then you look at a guy, what do you weigh, Cody? What are you, about 200 right now?
No, hell no. I'm little. I usually fight at 155, but in quarantine and heavy lifting and eating, I'm like 169 now.
Well, that'd be my biblical point, though. You in competition shape at 150, I bet you'd choke my ass silly, even with a 70-pound. That's just the thing, you guys understand. Like, in jiu-jitsu, it really will humble somebody. So especially if you know someone, if they're an arrogant dickhead, send them into a jiu-jitsu gym and tell them they got to keep them back. Steelbending, it's the same way, though.
Yeah.
If you approach that piece of metal that has no mind, it doesn't care what you do or don't do, it has no respect for you whatsoever, if you don't learn to know when to quit, you will harm yourself. And it can be a very permanent kind of deal.
Yeah.
I would encourage everybody to walk into this with a spirit of interest and humility, and you'll be amazed how strong you'll be as time goes forward.
Yeah, man. I've got a lot out of what you said today, honestly. Like, it was really cool to hear you say that. I'm going to be going back, humbling myself and going back to some smaller stuff and making sure I can hit it in all three ways, man.
a style that Tanner's been getting into more and more, and this is what I tell all you guys, that I cannot endorse this method enough, okay? So he's been taking some pretty soft 60 timber ties. Okay. So these bends, any one of you could put into a U, but Tanner's been snapping them.
Yeah.
So what that requires is he's working this thing back and forth.
Yeah.
But what he's doing is he's using more and more unorthodox positions.
Yeah.
So when you add that up, let's say he goes through and does 300 or 400 bar breaks over the next 6 months, the amount of angles and positions he used, that will really translate to a tremendous overall style of strength.
Yeah.
You guys didn't know that, you know, if you only press one way overhead,
you're
weaker than the guy who presses in all kinds of different crazy ways, right? So the more you move, the more you can move. So what I would say is there's a tremendous value in breaking soft steel that requires you to hit it and move it 20, 30, 40 times before the break.
Yeah.
Some of the guys have been really getting into the really hard steel snaps.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that, but I will tell you, for a lot of you guys, I feel like you could take an hour to try to break a red nail.
Yeah.
Or you could break 40 soft 60s in 10 minutes or 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's more like 20. I don't know. But I think that for that beginner, that high volume, relatively medium resistance is going to take you so much farther, and you're not really going to hurt yourself. The yeah. worst thing that happens is you'll get a nail so hot that you'll burn your finger somewhere.
Yeah.
And that'll yeah. be the worst part of it.
Yeah, on the recommendation of David Horn and Don, I've been doing a bunch of laying down snaps and stuff like that. God damn, if that doesn't feel like I'm getting strong for grappling, man, oh man, that's some tough stuff.
And the thing is too, is you know, when you look at some of the jiu-jitsu positions that the unorthodox body alignment makes it hard to weight train it.
Yeah.
So if somebody was a big player of like butterfly to close guard to open guard transitional work.
Yep.
Imagine if you just practice snapping steel bars, leveraging off of your different hips for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
What would that be like? And that's the thing is it's as soon as you take it from being this one particular thing and view it as this is a way for me to get stronger in whatever I want to do, the fields of creativity open up.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. So, it's the same thing like for a good guillotine where you're getting those elbows way up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun things you can play with ripping and breaking things to get even stronger torsion in here. Totally recommend it.
Oh, damn. Well, I'm a guillotine guy. So off air, I'm going to hit you up about some tips for that.
There's some things that will basically raise both games at the same time.
Awesome. All right. So in closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show? We already mentioned Robert, but how about some other names?
Rob would be a great one. If you can get a hold of Paul Knight, I think that when Paul was doing a lot of bending, he was king of the hill.
All right. Reach out to him and put the word out. I think Derek reached out to him for me. He didn't
probably
sound too interested, but maybe we can wear him down.
The other guy I'd recommend who might be in more of a position to want to do it would be Aaron Corcoran.
Okay.
Out of everybody in North America, Aaron has certifiably bent the hardest bar.
Wow.
Aaron did like a 6.5-inch stainless steel 5/16 square bar. And the only other person that I've seen did it was in Europe. And I'm sorry, Europeans, especially Russians, y'all steel is bullshit. European steel is so much softer than the steel we have. It just is. I have challenge bars that I've been sent from 5 different countries in Europe.
Yeah.
None of them were ever harder by diameter than what I can roll down the road and buy from my local welding shop.
Oh yeah.
Just, I had it. You know, they're all into that Green New Deal recycling shit. So most of their steel is recycled. It's not.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. Aaron's stainless steel square bar bend is the best overhand bend that's ever been done.
Wow.
It should be in a museum. And the funny thing is when you go to his house, there's a box in that garage. And for those of you that are really smart on your steel bending, it would blow your mind to see what is in that box. Aaron's unquestionably one of the strongest benders of all time. But here's the other part about it. When Aaron just decided to go play around and bench last year, he had a couple of health problems come up, but he went in and did like 2 or 3 sessions, and you see videos of him repping 350 to 375 effortlessly. Homeboy's strong. He would be a great guy to have on a show, and he's smart. He's like an engineer. Yeah. Like, he's a fucking genius.
I want to have him. Yeah, I'm working on that one too.
I'm cool with Aaron, so if you need help on him, I can reach out and say, hey, man, do this thing. You'll like it.
I'd appreciate that. All right, where can people find you on social media and stuff like that?
Guys, I do keep an Instagram account, Adam T. Glass. I've had a YouTube channel since 2007, which probably has 1,200 videos. I don't do this. I don't talk into videos. I don't explain what I'm doing. I just take little clips and I just show you what I'm doing. But what I will tell you is for you guys that are into steel bending, if you go back and look at video content I uploaded between the end of 2007 and 2010, you will see many, many of the bends that I have, all my bends that were certified bends you'll be able to find somewhere. I didn't archive it very well, but if you pick through it, you'll see it. Both of those are an option. You can reach out and email me if you want, adamtglass00@gmail.com. I make no promises on what I will or will not do if you reach out to me. It just depends on what day of the week it is, all right? This is not what I do. I just like to do it.
Yeah.
And then the final thing I'd say is that if you guys are curious more on the training side, areyouthemovement.com, a website that I keep up with Frankie Ferris. I've done some coaching work. Me and David Whitley have done a couple things over the years you guys can find.
Oh, nice.
A couple things like that. There was a podcast. Unfortunately, the owner of the podcast passed away this year, good friend Eric Ferrello. Ferrello's site, as far as I know right now, is still up and running, motivationandmuscle.com. Nice. So many great podcasts. There are podcasts we did talking about steel bending there too, and general grip and everything else. And, you know, the big thing I'd want everyone to know too is if you guys want to ever compete, that's what I really like to do. I'll be at the Olympia this year, hopefully trying to win again like I did last year. I'll be at the Arnold next year trying to win like I didn't win last year.
Nice.
And we have the big King Kong contest coming up in October. It'll be your chance to try out if you want to do a little bit of grip sport, all single-hand lifts against about 300 lifters across the world. Even with the virus lockdown, a bunch of us are committed that we will provide that service. So if you're in North Texas especially, you're welcome to come to my place. And I don't know, maybe I'll be back over here. Who knows, Cody?
All right, Adam. Well, thanks so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, bro.
We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you so much, guys.